Let's see my thing. Yes. There we go. No? I guess I can move the paper.
I guess so. Well, hello, hello, hello.
Hello. How is everyone tonight?
Yeah.
It's a wonderful, rainy, stormy day here in Virginia.
Yeah, it's
well,
kind of gray.
Through.
It's gray. There's no water coming down, really.
Well, there was earlier.
Yeah. But welcome to Hip and Humble Podcast. I'm Aram.
And I'm Mom.
And we want to welcome you to our show. We talk about all things antique and collectibles, and we sprinkle in history as well. Before we get started, we wanted to thank our sponsor, Hip and Humble Antiques, LLC. We got three locations. We got two in Virginia. One's in downtown Fredericksburg at a store called Oldies But Goodies. The other's in Stafford at a store called Boswell's Corner Antiques. And the third is just outside Oklahoma City in Bethany at a place called Rink Gallery. And of course, for those of you that are not all about driving, we have a store on Etsy. And when you have time, please go check us out. If we don't have anything that tickles your fancy at the moment, I promise we will soon.
We're always changing and finding fun things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we just put a new stock at the Fredericksburg store.
Yes.
Yes. And thanks so much, everyone. In this episode, we're actually going to be talking mostly about history of cosmetics and some of the technologies that have evolved through that industry.
Very weird stuff.
There's a lot of weird stuff that has come about through.
It is amazing how far people will go, including all of us, to be prettier or more handsome.
Well, I think realistically, beauty has always been the focus. People have been searching through nature for a way to change their appearance throughout all of human history. And from that same perspective, people have also been searching for things to improve the health of their skin and hair. You know, from ancient Egypt to now, people have been using exfoliates, honey, and milk. Actually, one of the, I guess, trendsetters in ancient Egypt for women's makeup was Cleopatra, and she actually bathed in rose water.
Yep.
Yeah.
She was said to be the most beautiful woman at the time.
Yes, she was.
Of course, we didn't see all the other girls.
That's true.
You know.
But only in recent history, at least that I've seen, hygiene has been highly, I guess, publicized, at least in modern cosmetics. From what I could tell, a lot of that has to do with marketing.
Well, hygiene wasn't a big deal, period.
Yeah.
So, you know, it wasn't uncommon to go 5-6 months or a year without actually taking a bath.
Well,
back in colonial days, they didn't bathe all the time because they thought that it would make them sick.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
so they had these little things they put on their dresses or lapels. They're called nosegays.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you come up to a particularly fragrant individual, you would kind of stick your nose down in your little chest area where the nosegay was, because it had herbs or flowers or lavender or whatever, so you could like sniff on that and not have to, you know, sniff on whoever it was you were talking to.
Yeah. Well, in the 19th and the 20th century, actually, to get out of social engagements for women, it was a very common practice to say that they had just washed their hair to get out of going to social events, because they didn't have hair dryers or anything to dry their hair or anything like that. And so whenever they would wash their hair, it would take a day, 2 days for it to really dry.
That's true.
You know, so they would go weeks without washing their hair, and then, you know, they basically planned when they were going to wash their hair around their social events. And if they didn't want to go to something, they'd say, "Oh, I washed my hair just now."
And see, nowadays women tell their husbands, "Oh, I'm sorry, not tonight. I got to wash my hair."
Yeah.
So there
you go. But now we know that's a lie, because we have modern technology.
But I will say, when I was pregnant with you and I was little, you were little bitty, my hair was very long, and I had very, very thick hair.
Yeah.
And it would take even blow drying was kind of a joke, because it was just too thick.
Yeah.
So it would take a day or two, and I could still just reach under it and my hair would still be damp underneath.
Wow.
But I did wash my hair more than, you know,
once
six
a week.
Weeks. Yeah.
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 the history of,
he was a spitter, so I did watched a lot.
I did apparently spit. There's a video of me, isn't it, throwing up down Dad's back.
Yeah, that was a hoot.
I bet.
Yeah, because my husband would like put him over his head and be like, "Oh, look, airplane," and Aaron would just go, "Bah."
I just throw up every time.
Yeah,
well, glass stomach back in the day.
It's true.
Mm-hmm.
Very true.
The history of cosmetics back to that spans at least 7,000 years and is present in almost every society on Earth. The cosmetic body art is argued to have been the earliest form in earliest form of a ritual in human cultures. The ancient Greeks obviously used cosmetics all the time. Cosmetics are also mentioned in the Old Testament, I found out. 2 Kings 9:30. Then Jehu went to Jezreel, and Jezebel heard about it. She put an eye makeup, arranged her hair, and looked out of a window. Also, in Esther, she pleased him and won his favor immediately. He provided her with beauty treatments and special food. He assigned her 7 female attendants, select from the king's palace, and moved her attendants into the best place in the harem, Esther 2:9. Which I thought was really interesting that the Jezebel being the worst queen in the Bible.
Well, Jezebel.
And Esther being the best, arguably one of the best queens in the Bible. We just had a power outage.
Just a little one. Just a little tiny one. Hey, what was that?
But
Jezebel.
It must have been. But beauty treatments were also used in ancient Rome, though evidence suggests that it was actually looked down upon. But I said mostly prostitutes and older rich women would wear makeup.
Well, I think with the makeup and all that kind of stuff, it's always been to catch somebody's eye.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like male peacocks. They're the ones that have all the pretty feathers and birds, and they fluff them all up to catch the girl's eye. And it's the same, you know, with girls.
Absolutely. Well, the only exception being ancient Egypt, because in ancient Egypt, they thought that the application of their cosmetics had spiritual
connotations,
and they also said that it protected their eyes from the sun. So they would have the really dark eyeliner, and they'd have basically very thick black. And into the cat, or what is it called? Cat eyes?
Cat eyes.
Into the cat eyes, and they said that that protected their eyes from the desert sun.
Which actually, if you look at the football player people, still have the black stuff around their eyes.
To protect them from the stadium lights so they're not getting glare. Yeah, or the sun.
Yeah, big ball.
Yeah. But they had, you know, even back then, they for skin treatment and hair treatment.
I say Egypt, I think, was really more known. Well, I mean, it was known for a lot of things, but as far as beauty goes, they were known, I think, more for their treatments.
Yeah, their skin care. They would bathe in milk and honey, mm-hmm. and they would make a paste of that milk and honey, and they would do different face masks and like almost charcoal. So to do their actual eyeliner, all the way up into the 12th century, even they still use this product called kohl, KOHL. It's not like the kohl, like the charcoal mask that we use today.
No.
It's a different material.
But the other bathing and stuff, those would be pretty similar to our mud baths in the spas. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. A lot of that came.
It was all very commonplace, and I think today a lot of times people will like not go to spas or whatever because it's been, I don't know, always just for the wealthier people or whatever. But they're actually good medicinally to go, and it gets all the purification, or, you know, purifies your skin, gets all the toxins out.
Yeah.
Even massage and all that is very beneficial health-wise.
Yeah. Coming out of
I don't know where the colonial people got that you shouldn't do that, but
yeah, I don't know. Well, coming out of ancient Egypt and Greece, coming out of the ancient cultures and into sort of the Middle Ages, pre-industrial revolution, a lot of those practices of self-care and hygiene were lost. They weren't practiced anymore, and a lot of the ideologies of the church and everything like that really derailed a lot of that self-care, for lack of a better terminology.
Well, I would totally agree with that because, you know, it was more the church and whatnot, to be modest.
Right.
And to not draw attention to yourself. Amish come to mind.
Well,
Mennonites, there's a lot of them.
In the 20th century, so in the 1900s, the makeup, especially in the beginning, wasn't very popular. Women wore very, very little makeup, and men definitely didn't. Back in the ancient cultures, all men in ancient Egypt wore makeup. And what was interesting is everybody in those cultures wore makeup, and what distinguished them from each other was the containers that their makeup was actually in. Mm. So you'll find these different little containers, makeup containers made out of bone, ivory, and stone, and different things like that. Those were always used by rich people or the aristocrats in ancient Egypt. And that was also the same in ancient China. Mm. So ancient China, actually, they made it illegal for women of lower status to paint their nails in bright colors. That was reserved for only rich women.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the social status in...
Now, China is huge on cosmetic rituals and creams and mm-hmm. all kinds of stuff.
Well, in Japan, too, they got the geishas.
Yeah, yeah.
They would use all kinds of different things. And what's interesting, too, is all the way up until the 19th century, the majority of the cosmetic products that were used were poisonous to yeah. to the skin. Also in ancient Egypt, the things that they would use to color their lips red, that almost all of those were poisonous. And the phrase "kiss of death" is thought to have originated from there, because if you were to kiss a woman in ancient Egypt, there's a good chance that you might die.
Yeah.
Because
it's
of
amazing
what they put on
that
their
we've
lips.
Even survived
yeah.
all of that. And then, you know, Coca-Cola was formed and there was cocaine in it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's amazing any of us are here today.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
But, yeah.
Now, also in the 20th century, the majority of women that wore makeup were prostitutes, specifically in cabarets and brothels. Face enameling, however, which was actually painting your face, was very popular among the rich, and that was to make themselves look paler. Just before we got on, we were talking about the kind of shift in perspective from pale being attractive to tan being attractive, at least for those of us that are melanin challenged.
Oh yeah, my husband is very melanin challenged.
At least for those of us that are challenged by melanin.
And then there's some of us that try not to get in the sun.
Yeah.
Because if I get in the sun, then I turn very, very dark.
Mm.
Which I don't mind being very, very dark, but I also have like little skin cancers and all that kind of stuff. So I try to avoid the sun.
Yeah.
As much as humanly possible.
Yeah, and I put on sunscreen every day now.
Every day. I have sunscreen.
Every single day.
Anything I know that's going to be exposed has been sunscreened.
Yeah. Well, I use it as lotion at this point.
Yeah, pretty much.
I literally put it everywhere in the morning. When I get up out of bed, I lather up.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will say the only time it sucks is whenever I get home, and if I go for a run or something, then it's in your eyes. In my eyes, and that sucks.
Yeah.
But it was – so obviously the face enameling, the main ingredient was arsenic.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Yeah, so it was fairly dangerous. But the reason that pale skin was associated with wealth actually was because those who looked pale, they could afford to sit inside all day, as opposed to poor women who had to go outside and work the fields along their husbands and children.
Yeah. Of course, the big, big floppy hats will help out with that too.
Yeah, that's true. Rouge actually was not popularized or accepted for a very, very long time. It was considered provocative. And it was reserved for women of the night.
Mm.
Yeah.
You tell my mom that.
Yeah. I don't think I will.
I will.
Yeah, I know you will.
Nana, rouge mm-hmm. is not good.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting, though, reading here about Romans mm-hmm. and, you know, how they kind of looked down on people wearing the makeup. And later, you know, the Christians tore it down and stuff, too. But the Romans were very big on bathing and having all their baths and all the oils and all of that kind of stuff. And
that is very true.
And they were
Big on scents.
Big on scents.
They would use huge, like, heavy amounts of perfume and lots of different like oils, like you said, to basically make different smells. So it was not necessarily how you looked as much as more how you smelled back then.
Which, just to kind of bring it around, the Romans are pretty well known for their aqueducts and having the water coming in and out of the cities. And if you guys don't know about all that, I really look it up because it's really very interesting how they built all these aqueducts and had all the bathhouses and different things. But one gross fact, here's a gross fact for you. They used to have kind of communal bathroom areas.
Yeah.
So you'd sit down and do your business, and there was a communal sponge.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody used the same communal sponge. And then I don't know how long it took them, but they eventually figured out by doing that it makes you sick.
Shocking how that works.
It really was. Yeah. So I always think it's kind of funny because they'll go in and do all these elaborate rituals of the bathing and the oils and the scents and all that, and then you turn around and you do that. It's like, well, huh?
Yeah, it's like you're bathing, but are you really getting clean?
Nope,
not quite.
So that's your gross fact for the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that carried on through the Middle Ages too.
Yeah.
I mean, the Middle Ages are not known for being very hygienic, shall we say.
No.
But even those that could afford baths, the kings and so on and so forth, they would keep one bath full of water. They wouldn't change out the water.
Well, that saying,
don't throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Yeah.
That obviously originated in England, and in the poorer sides of England, they would basically buy a basin full of water, and the entire family would bathe using that basin full of water from the head of the household all the way down. So by the time it got to the point where they were washing the babies, basically in black, dirty water. And so that saying, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, was very valid back then because if you were sitting there washing a baby and you turn around for a second and you look back, there's no baby. And then you go throw out the bathwater and sure enough, oh, there's the baby.
Yeah.
No. It's just a different lifestyle.
It was a different life then. And you know what? Everybody was doing just like we're doing today with whatever toiletry rituals that we have today.
Yeah.
I'm sure like 100 years from now, they're going to look back and go, oh, gross. I can't believe they did all this and that.
Yeah.
Did that.
Well, I mean, there have been strides recently with all kinds of different, I guess, natural remedies for like deodorants and antiperspirants, because there's a lot of studies that have come out that said the majority of deodorants that are coming out nowadays, or have been coming out for the past 20, 30, 40 years, are not necessarily toxic, but they're clogging up your pores, and they're making it to the point where I guess the theory is, if you never use deodorant in your life, your armpits wouldn't stink as bad as they do if you had started using deodorant at a young age.
Well, and I know, with different people that have had breast cancer and stuff, that's one of the first things they tell you is quit using your deodorant.
Hmm.
You know, you have to find a natural deodorant, and there's a few brands out there that they recommend, but there is something to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, I don't know. We'd have to go back to that nosegay situation and kind of go from there, or get some of those Egyptian oils and,
yeah, well, I feel like it would have to be, the Egyptians, for their underarms, they actually used incense pellets. They would put incense pellets under their arms and, like, crush them.
So that would work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, to be honest, I read that, and I was like, I kind of like to try that.
Well, a lot of times that's what, well, I know I will do is I'll put perfume under my arms.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I put perfume in, like, sensitive areas, and I'll do it on my, like, the
neck and your arms,
yeah, and
in
my
chest,
in my wrists and stuff,
and your elbows.
Yeah, sometimes my elbows. Actually, no.
But I think under I do under my armpits sometimes.
Yeah, Yeah. If I'm doing like a refresher, like if I've been out all day but I haven't been active and sweating, but I'm like, oh, you're going to go out for dinner or something, then I'll do a refresher and I'll spray in my armpits. But I don't generally spray cologne in my armpits.
Apparently, if you were Egyptian, you would.
Well, if I was Egyptian, I'd have the incense pellets.
That's true. I don't know. Nowadays,
and I'd have really dark eyeliners and cat eyes.
You would look very weird being blonde and black eyes, and yeah, that wouldn't work out for you.
It would be very different for sure. Very different.
Yeah, although, it wouldn't work out.
Although I think I could do the beard. I could make the beard go straight down.
Could make the beard go. That's like the big popular thing now. All the boys want the beard. Wow. Now everybody looks the same.
Yeah, that's true.
It's like, okay, now if you're fresh shaven, then you're like, oh, now they stand out.
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, they do.
No, I mean, they do and they don't.
No, they do.
Well, I mean,
it'll all swing back.
I mean, well, I guess I was in the military, and so I was used to all that, so I've just been around so many fresh shaven. And also, I don't...
I'd like your dad, who's fresh shaven forever until he retired.
Yeah. Well, I think that he has a pretty good excuse for wanting a beard.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, it'll all swing back around just like everything. Well, just like the history here. I mean, you know, nowadays we still have, you know, all these different beauty rituals. Now people will pay to go have mud baths. They'll go pay and have... you know, wraps.
Yep.
We were looking at one website, and it had all these just strange products that have been used. And they had those little cooling things that you buy for your eyes. You like put it in the freezer, and then you do for the bags under your eyes. They used to have ice masks.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks medieval.
It looks medieval, but it's basically this weird mask, and they would put ice cubes in it, and they would put it on your face to refresh your face. Mm-hmm. So mostly actresses did it, but it didn't spoil your makeup.
And on that note, we're going to pause real quick just to have a shout out again for our sponsor, Hip and Humble Antiques, LLC. We have a very active Instagram page, hipn.humble at instagram.com. That's hipn.humble at instagram.com. We post all of our episodes. We do episode announcements for every single one of our episodes. We also, after the shout out, we're going to do our Weird Find of the Week segment, and we post a picture of our Weird Find of the Week. And we are always looking for, and we're always active on engaging with people on there. So please give us a follow, give us a like, comment on everything. Promise you'll hear from one of us, mostly me.
Hey.
No, I do manage most of the social media pages, but.
Yeah, I manage all the other stuff.
Yes, you do.
So.
But yes, please, we just want to thank you guys so much for spending this time with us every week and for following along. Those of you that are downloading, that really means a lot. If you want to, if you like what we're doing and want to support us, go on our Patreon page, patreon.com/hipandhumble, and go ahead and give us a small donation if you like, just so we can continue doing what we're doing, and we'll go from there. But thanks. We just really want to shout out to everyone that spends time with us, and thank you for all of your support. So
I think though on Etsy that we have our weird product from last week, isn't it? Do you have it up for sale on Etsy?
Which one was our weird product?
The breast pump.
Yes. Breast pump.
Absolutely go to Etsy.
Yeah, go on to our Etsy. That's Hip and Humble Antiques on Etsy.com. And our weird find from last week is up there right now. That's the breast pump.
Yep, it's the breast pump. And it is a hoot.
It is definitely a hoot. A hoot and a half, one might say.
It really is. So it took a while to figure out what that was.
But it did. It did.
But that was fun.
On that note, we have a very interesting piece for our Weird Find of the Week this week.
I don't even know where it came from.
I have no idea.
It's like Aram just brings this downstairs, and I'm like, where the heck did that come from?
So I
don't remember buying it.
You know what? It to be honest, it looks like something you'd get at FCF.
Oh.
You know.
FCF is kind of like colonial camping. My boys do that.
Frontiersman Camping Fellowship. So we go out and we dress in period gear or garb, as we call it, in canvas tents and things like that. We basically camp as if we were in a different era. You pick a character from the American Frontiersman days, and you pick it from a certain decade, and you model your character off of the attire and tools that they would have used in that decade. And we do competitions like black powder rifle shooting, tomahawk throwing, knife throwing, archery, things like that. It's a really cool, fun time.
And if you have boys like I did, the Royal Rangers is where the FCF comes out of, and I would highly recommend Royal Rangers. So yeah. It's been great for my kids. And the FCF is something that men will do. I think they've got even 70-year-old men, 80-year-old men out there.
70,
so it's kind of a lifelong thing.
I think there was an 82-year-old at the last FCF.
It's just a really nice time of men's fellowship out there. And it doesn't seem like men always have something really wholesome that they can go and do or be a part of.
Well, they don't have a lot of outlets like that. And I know because from personal experience, for my brothers and I and my father, it's been such a bonding thing for us. And it's been such a wholesome and, like you said, just a very peaceful thing for us because it's exciting. You get that camaraderie, that brotherhood. That you don't get in, you know, regular life.
you really don't. It's, you know, and it's kind of fun to go back in time somewhat.
Yeah.
And kind of learn those skills that they used to have. And it gives you a better appreciation.
It definitely gives you a huge appreciation for all the advancements in technology that we've had.
Especially like indoor plumbing.
Electricity. Yeah. Although, I don't know, part of me is like, well, yeah, I would love to have a wood stove. But maintaining a wood stove 365 days a year, maybe not.
Well, I don't know. They do it in Alaska. Well, you know, up in the Northeast, when you drive around up there, about everybody uses wood heat. I mean, I'm sure they have some electrical or gas heat. But
yeah, I would imagine.
You'll see, like, huge things of wood and whatnot. And
yeah, yeah.
I would bet you that they're using a lot of wood heat or, was it pelts? I think they buy like some kind of pelts or something.
Hmm. Oh, that makes sense. Well, we're getting off on a rabbit trail.
Yep. Sorry about that.
That's your fault.
Okay.
You're always accusing me. That was you.
No, it's okay. I don't mind. That's what Aram does to me. That's why he treats his mother.
Oh my goodness.
Anyway, we have got this little thing, and it looks kind of like a frying pan.
It looks like a teeny tiny frying pan. It's
about
It's about 4 inches across and about 2 inches tall.
And it's brass, so it's kind of like a plastic. No, it's like tin or a little metal on the bottom.
Yeah.
And then it has a brass top, and there's a little, I don't know, little cover,
snuffer.
But it swings on and off. You just gave it away what it is, Aram.
I didn't give it away. I said it was a snuffer. The whole thing's not a snuffer, just the top piece.
It's a little cover that kind of swings on and off of it. So, you want to tell them what it is? You want me to?
You tell them.
It is an ashtray.
Yes, it is.
So, a
portable ashtray.
A portable ashtray. I think it's humorous that now I've noticed in shops and everything that, you know, nobody's smoking anymore, but the paraphernalia from that is, like, wildly popular.
Yeah, yeah. People that, especially, like, the old advertisements for cigarettes, like Newport is a really big one.
Yep.
The old Marlboro ads are huge. The tin signs and things like that. Of course, tin signs.
Yeah.
Are very popular with.
But ashtrays are big. Zippo lighters. Well, those have always been big. That's not going to go away. Zippos are cool.
Zippos are cool.
They're definitely cool.
But and there's a lot of. And I think
cigars.
I was going to say about Zippos. I think with Zippos, it's really cool because there's a lot of. They made a lot of very like small batches of custom Zippos.
Yeah. My middle son was telling me today that Zippo was coming out with one honoring the space shuttle that went off today. I think. Yeah. So I know he was going to look at that, but purchasing one of those. But a lot of people, they collect Zippos. There's a guy down at our shop, and that's what he has. They're all Zippos.
Mm-hmm.
He's collected them for years and years and years, and not just. I mean, it's all Zippo, But they have keychains and little measuring tapes and all kinds of Zippo paraphernalia. But anyway, cigars, pipes are huge.
Pipe stands.
Humidors.
Loose tobacco cases.
All of that, for some reason, is really big right now.
So that's our weird find of the week. This is really cool little antique ashtray.
He will put that up on Etsy.
Yes, I will.
And available for you to look at and purchase. Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of cute.
I think it's neat.
So, yeah. But there's a lot of, I like the ashtrays that are on the cast iron stands. So they kind of, they're up maybe two feet or something.
Yeah, the those are cigar ashtrays specifically. They made them like that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, because the cigarette ashtrays, a lot of those were very smaller and they're like the little dishes. But they made the cigar ashtrays, they make them specifically like a lot larger. And a lot of them have their own stands because it's assumed that a lot of times people smoke cigars inside like a specific room in their house. So it's like an accent piece.
Well, I got these two little brass shoes and I didn't know what they were for the longest time. And then finally figured out that it was a personal ashtray. Huh. And I mean, these little shoes are like maybe 2 inches. I mean, they're not big at all. But I was like, there's shoes and they're, you know, I'm a girl and I love the shoes. So, you know, and they were like 50 cents or something. So I had to get them. Anyway, I thought, well, what am I going to do with this? So my repurposing of this vintage item, I made it into a pincushion.
Yeah. Yeah. They look fantastic.
Yeah. It's really cute. So
they're adorable.
I kept one and then I gave one to my girlfriend, Angie. And I think they're adorable.
Hmm.
I love them. So it's always good. You can find some of that paraphernalia and repurpose it into something that's useful for your life. So for me, pincushions are always needed.
Oh, yeah.
Any kind of pincushion. But you can make them out of a lot of stuff.
For sure. Back to our original topic and everything and the cosmetics and everything like that. A lot of the information that I got, and we're not sponsored by this channel or anything, but I just wanted to plug it because if you go onto YouTube and look up Loepsie, Loepsie is the best I can pronounce it. She has an entire series going back from ancient Greece all the way into the 1990s of all of the hairstyles and the different products and stuff that were used throughout history. And she does an explanation of the fashion of the time and how women's hairstyles corresponded with that fashion. And at the end of every video, she actually does a tutorial. In each video, she styles her hair to that time period. And at the end, she does a tutorial to show you how they would actually style their hair during that time period. Fantastic channel, really great stuff. And it was a lot of fun to watch. And I thought it was really cool. It gave a lot of really great info.
I think it's interesting also how, what people think are beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, back well, in...
It changes so much.
Oh, yeah. Back in, was it Queen Victoria's age, you were considered more intelligent and beautiful the higher your forehead was.
Right.
So you'll look at a lot of, if you go to a museum or look it up, you'll see a lot of their pictures and stuff, and they have these high, high foreheads. And that was because they would pull their hair out, pluck all that hair out, so that their forehead would be incredibly high. Mm. And they would also...
And it's interesting, too, because it's different among different cultures. In India, there was a woman in the 1400s. Or no, it wasn't the 1400s. I'm sorry. I'm way far back. It was the 1800s, and I don't remember her name, but I can see the picture of her in my head because... To me, she was not a very attractive woman at all.
A lot of them weren't. Yeah. I mean, by our standards.
By our standards or by what I consider attractive. She had a unibrow and she was very short.
I'm sure that's unattractive in all areas.
Well, apparently she was desired by everyone. You know, she was a very heavily desired woman, and I guess it was rumored that multiple men who had proposed to her killed themselves whenever she said no. Because she was so beautiful.
Okay. Well, yeah. There's someone for everybody.
There, yeah. Well, apparently she was for a lot of people back then. Or, well, or not the ones that proposed to her.
Yeah. Well, Queen Elizabeth the First one was also was known to bleach her skin. So she would, you know, put on white makeup and stuff to appear more virginal and godlike.
Yeah. Also very bad for your skin and very unhealthy. Yeah.
Very, very bad. But people still do that today.
Yeah.
So they still do a lot of that. They would still do the, what is it called, the toilet mask, about 1875, and it would try to bleach their skin out.
Yeah.
But it's not really recommended.
No.
Because pretty nasty stuff's in bleach.
Yeah.
I got to tell my favorite one. My favorite one is the mask.
Yeah.
The sheet mask.
Oh.
Yeah, the ones you buy at, you know, the store and stuff, the little $1.99 ones, those are like really easy. This one you wore when you swam, 1928 era.
It definitely looks like the mask of a luchador.
Oh, a horror movie.
Well, but I'm saying like the, have you ever, I know you haven't seen it. I don't know why I'm asking.
No, I haven't seen it. Doesn't matter what it is.
Nacho Libre. It's a, so the Mexican wrestlers.
I have not seen Mexican wrestlers.
It's, anyways, they wear face, they wear full face masks that look just like that.
Yeah. They're a hoot, but they would wear them when they would swim so that their face would not be burnt.
Yeah. Yeah. And it definitely, it also kind of looks like Hannibal Lecter.
A little bit,
A little bit. Looks like you're swimming as Hannibal Lecter.
This one I think is particularly fun, is 1930s. They had these little, and bizarre little things, and it had two little knobs that would press into your cheeks.
Hmm.
And they were supposed to give you a fine set of dimples.
Yeah.
So, my mother has blessed all of us with dimples. So we didn't really need that.
Yeah.
But
No, I always tell Catherine I don't have any dimples, but
yeah, he does. He does.
But also going along with the products that were developed throughout the 18th, 19th and 20th century, in 1890, Alexander Godefroy, a Frenchman, as the majority of cosmetic inventors were, he invented the hairdryer. And in 1888, the quote from an article that I read at CNN talking about the invention of the hairdryer is, in 1888, Alexander Ferdinand Godefroy debuted his hairdressing device, is what he called it, in a French salon. And it kind of looks like something you would see in a sci-fi film. Were it like a brain sucker?
Yeah.
So it was essentially just a huge fan that would blow hot air that had a tube and a cone that would sit on top of your head.
Let me tell you what it was like. My grandmother had one of them I remember it was upstairs, and you weren't allowed to go up there and touch the hairdryer. But you would go up, and it was a whole chair. You sit down on the chair, and, of course, this was one. Well, let's see. I mean, it was probably from the 60s, yeah. I would say, that time frame.
Was did it have like a lot of ones from the 60s though, that I read about, they had, it was basically like cloth, and it would go around your whole head.
Yeah, well, it's like, if I remember right, so you would sit down with your wet hair or in curlers, because most of the time your hair was, you know, because they wanted it to curl, so you put curlers in.
Yeah, that was a big
stop. And there was like a, it wasn't really a cloth, but it's kind of almost like an old motorcycle helmet, and it would flip down over your head, and then you would sit there while it blew stuff, you know, blew all over your head.
Yeah. Huh.
And you would sit there until the end of time, because it took forever.
Mm-hmm.
To do that, so well, some of these devices dried very often.
Some of the devices we were talking about, specifically the curlers, they would take upwards of 10 hours to actually curl your hair and finish the drying process and so on and so forth.
Well, used to you would put curlers in at night,
mm-hmm.
and then you'd have that weird little scarf thing that goes over your head, and that would like hold all your your curlers in place. Let me tell you about the curlers.
Yeah.
Those things hurt. So my grandmother had, they're like these plastic, and they would have like little tiny bits of wire sticking out of them, because that's what would grab a hold of your hair and also your scalp. And I'm fairly certain parts of my brain matter at some point. And you would sleep in those, and morning you get up and whoo, look at there, curls. For about 20 minutes until the weight of my hair goes, yeah, we're not doing that.
Yeah.
And there it goes.
Yeah, it really wasn't until the 60s whenever hair dryers, they actually switched from metal casings to plastic casings. Yeah. Whenever they became really popular. Also, it had a lot to do with the hippie movement, because men also had long hair. And so there were more and more hair dryers in homes. In the 20s, actually, the majority of women, they didn't do their own hair. Yeah. So they would have these appointments every couple of weeks. And so whenever the invention of the hair dryer, the personal hair dryer came out, they were actually protested by barbers and salons.
I can see that.
Because they were taking away their business. Because at this point, every woman in the country was having hair appointments regularly every 2-3 weeks.
Right.
And so with them being able to do their own hair, they were losing all this money.
Yeah.
You know, like, an incredible, because being a barber in the 20s and 30s, that was a surefire way to make money.
Well, yeah. And that was also kind of like one of the hub areas of town gossip.
Yep.
And
yep.
News and everything else.
It only makes sense, because if everyone that you know is going to one, everyone in the whole town is going to one place, it makes sense that you're going to have more social interactions there.
Yep, that barber knew everything. That's why they would make a lot of money, because they'd bribe you.
Yeah, don't you tell anybody this.
Don't tell anybody this, mm-hmm.
But.
Dot, dot, dot.
Mm-hmm. Guys, there's so much more, and I did so much. We looked up so many different things for this, but we are running out of time.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I enjoyed the hairstyle.
I know, this one's been
fun.
Fun. Yeah, and I didn't even get to talk about the creams and Avon.
Avon's huge.
Avon. Well, it started towards the end of the 20th century. So because of many of the, just real quick.
Aram's not quick.
At the end of the 20th century, because of all the failures of cosmetics, i.e. their health risks, a lot of those became common knowledge towards the end of the 20th century. And so the beauty industry responded by selling many like topical creams, and they marketed them through makeup parties, i.e.
Right.
Avon.
Avon. Mm. Yeah, we'll have to do like a show on Avon, because Avon, they're highly collectible now, because particularly the cologne bottles and that kind of thing. But I remember my mom would get us Avon, and they'd get little we call them lipsticks, but they were little chapsticks, and they'd come in all kinds of fun little figurines and kind of things.
Nice.
But that was another thing with Avon, is they not only produced makeups and stuff like that, they also put them in fun bottles, great packaging. And a lot of people collect those packaging still today. So I know, I think I've got several upstairs that I need to get on the shelves at some point.
Yeah, we will.
But yeah, we will.
Yeah.
Or they'll be on Etsy, one or the other. But
yeah, guys, be looking out for this.
But yeah, Avon parties, and you had your Avon lady, mm-hmm. and the Avon lady would come and that was like a big day. They'd come and leave their little Avon book, and you'd go through the whole thing. And they had one that was the chapstick in it for Christmas, and it was a little stocking, and it was a pin.
Cute.
So you could use your little brooch pin stocking thing, and then, oh my goodness, my lips are dry. Oh, did I get them? There we go.
That's adorable.
Oh, it was great.
That's fantastic.
It was awesome. They don't have any fun stuff anymore. Of course, nowadays,
stuff,
if you gave a 7-year-old, you know, a brooch type pin,
they'd be like, they would never wear it. They'd break it.
Yeah, they'd probably stab somebody with
it. They'd probably stab somebody too.
Stab their eyeball. But of course, we did that too, and we're not dead, so.
Yeah. Well, I remember Dad was telling me about in high school, they'd make like blowguns with paper clips, and they'd literally, it was great. They try to see how deep you get in the other person's skin. It's like, is that great? Is that really great?
Nah. Now, marshmallow guns, I let you guys have marshmallow guns.
Yeah.
The dogs loved you.
We also had these light sticks. They were like these whipping, they weren't supposed to be whipping sticks, but they were light, they were light sticks. And I remember we, whenever we moved to Virginia the first time, or sorry, the second time we moved to Northern Virginia, we lived in our fifth wheel for about 3 months in this mobile home park in Aquia Harbor, near Aquia Harbor in Stafford, Virginia. And it was really great, but it was three little boys living in a very small space. Yes. And so Kale and I found these light sticks and we were waving them at each other and we figured, oh yeah, they were like this silicone rubber material and you could whip them really fast. And we figured out, you know, we could hit each other with it relatively nicely. And so we were, you know, just playing around sword fighting, and then Kale like reared back and hit me just a little too hard, and he could tell. I've never seen so much fear in his eyes, because as soon as that hit and he heard the sound, his eyes got as big as saucers, and he was like, "Ooh, I did bad," and he like ran directly into the trailer because you were in there. Or at least he thought you were in there, but I knew you were not. And I ran after him, and he jumped face first into his bed so that I wouldn't hit him back. And I reared up and slammed it across his back, and he had a welt from his shoulder blade.
Yeah, that was not nice.
Down to the bottom of his neck. Yeah, no, I got spanked, and we
yeah, those. Yeah, I mean, he accidentally did it, and you went in and on purpose did it.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Let's be nice.
I was not nice. I was a story.
No, you were not.
That was
nice.
Putting me in a negative light. I'm not saying that it was nice. I'm saying, saying in hindsight, very funny. However, at the time, I was not being nice at all.
No, you was not. No. You should probably get spanked again.
All right, maybe so. I'll have to tell Catherine to do that.
That's okay. I got your dad up there. Okay. Oh, look, I got a ruler right here.
Oh my goodness. Oh, folks. Thanks so much for getting through all this. We're just so excited to have you guys listen. It was such a fun time for us, and
leave us messages. We like to hear messages.
Yeah, we love messages.
If there's something you want us to talk about, let us know.
Yeah, the weird stuff segment came from one of our comments, and I'm just so grateful. I think that's such a cool, fun little thing that we're doing.
It is fun. And there's a lot of weird stuff.
Yeah, we got a lot of weird stuff, and there is a lot of weird stuff.
Yeah,
so
that is for sure.
We will never run out of things to talk about.
Nope.
But yeah, please let us know in comments underneath all of our any of our Instagram posts. Hits, and our Instagram is hipin.humble, hipin.humble, Instagram. Please let us know on any of our posts what you guys would like to hear, what you guys would like us to talk about. We're always looking for suggestions on topics and your feedback. So, yeah, thanks again so much for spending this time with us. It's really fun.
It is fun. Yeah. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun for me.
A lot of fun for me, too. Well, stay hip.
And humble.
All right. Bye.
Bye.